All right, Chit Shows, if you were someone who constantly finds yourself giving, giving, and then giving more to the point where you are completely burnt out, listen up. I am teaming up with the Boundaries Queen herself, Barb Nangle, to host a transformative workshop called Stop Overgiving, Repair Your Life from the Inside Out. It's happening on Wednesday, November 13th at 7 p.m. Eastern, and this workshop is for anyone who is trapped in people-pleasing patterns, exhausted from sacrificing your needs on behalf of others, for anyone whose inability to set boundaries is causing you to neglect yourself, saying yes when you really want to say no because you think saying no makes you a bad person. In this workshop, Barb is going to teach you how to set clear, authentic boundaries, giving you real tools you can start using immediately. She will provide you with tips and scripts on what to say and how to say it, as well as what to do when people push back against your boundaries. Plus, there will be plenty of time for you to get answers on your personal questions directly from a boundaries expert. So if you are ready to break out of this people-pleasing prison you're trapped in, start living for yourself, well, how about you head to adultchildpodcast.com/workshops to get your damn spot. I'm also running a special right now. If you join the Shit Show community between now and November 1st, you will get access to this workshop for free. So with limited capacity, make sure you get your ticket now before it's gone. So either go to adultchildpodcast.com/workshops or go to the show notes and DM the Join Shit Show. Trust me, this is a workshop you don't want to miss.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Worrying is not an action. It will never decrease any of the possible future pain I imagine. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. And this is where we talk about serious shit, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. This is the podcast where we talk about some pretty heavy topics, some pretty painful shit, but it is served to you in a palatable way. You will also be entertained. You will also laugh. Or you might not like this at all, and that's fine too. So welcome aboard. Buckle up. We curse here. You've been warned. So today we are joined by a fellow recovering shit show, Patsy Creedy. So I knew Patsy from the rooms when I was living in San Francisco. I went to this one meeting that was called 10 Years After, and it was a meeting that was focused on the issues that come up in longer-term sobriety. And that meeting was very much a lifeline for me as I was bottoming out from this adult child shit. So she recently published her first book. It is a memoir, and it's called Boy, Man, Bird, Anatomy of Addiction. And it is the story of her journey of dealing with her son's addiction, who unfortunately overdosed and died 7 years ago. And it is just a raw, beautiful book about the horror and the pain of having a child going through addiction and detaching with love and grief. So let's get the damn show on the road, folks. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show. This is my online support community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. This is where you can connect with other fellow shit shows. Hey, you peeps that have been wanting to join for forever. I know you're out there. I know you're fucking out there because they keep joining. You guys keep joining. We're getting close to the holidays, right? We're essentially there. This is really stressful times where we're dealing with family and lots of things going on. And so maybe it would be a useful time to have a group of peers, of people who get it. So how about you damn the join shit show already? And you probably heard in the very beginning, if you join in the next few days, you will get Barb's Stop Overgiving workshop for free. So let's just do it already. Let's just do it and head to the show notes. Click the link to join. You can quit after a month, less than a dollar a day. Come on. Come on, folks. Let's get with the program. Next, give me a little follow on Instagram and TikTok at AdultChildPod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, please, please give me a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. Just when it's getting good, you hit me with a goodbye. Same thing every night. I can never get enough time. All right. Well, folks, we are in for a damn treat. We have Patsy Creedy. She's the author of Boy, Man, Bird, Anatomy of Addiction. I was thinking about, hi. Welcome to the shit show. When did you start going to the 10 years after meeting?
Gosh, when did I? Before I had 10 years. Mm-hmm. And a long time ago, yeah.
So I got sober here in Jacksonville, and then I moved to San Francisco when I had 5 years. Uh-huh. And I don't know if this is true or not, but what I felt like I heard in the meetings here from people who had time was like, life sucked. I got sober. And sure, like life on life's terms still happened. But like pain of my own making ceased the day that I got sober. Now, whether or not that's what they were saying, that's what I heard.
Right.
And so when I found myself with like 7 years, 8 years, 9 years sober, just like habitually finding myself in these horribly toxic relationships after promising to myself that I was going to do things differently, that I wasn't going to ignore red flags, and thinking I must just be like inherently fucked up and unfixable. And thank God I found that meeting, and I found the women's 10 year plus meeting, and finally learned that like, oh no, this is actually like a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is like a common thing.
Yeah, I know. I like that meeting for that reason too. I mean, there was a guy in there who he went to jail and sober, or the all kinds of things mm-hmm. that happen because you're still an alcoholic. And I feel like one of the lies of my disease is that if I have time, then I should be blank, right? Like I can't mess up. I can't do all that because I'm sober.
Or I should be happy.
Yeah.
Or my life should look a certain way.
Exactly. Yeah. And that'll take you out, you know?
Oh, 100%. It was actually, do you know who Marcy is?
Yes.
Yeah. It was hearing her speak. I had just had the realization in the midst of an emotional flashback when the guy I was dating for, you know, a month broke up with me. And I thought that my husband of 30 years had died in a plane crash. And I felt like I was going to die. And I went to that 10 years after a meeting, and I heard Marcy talk about how when she was 7 years sober, that that she hit a bottom as a result of the ending of a relationship in which she came to terms with her childhood.
Keep making it happen mm-hmm. until we can have a turn, you know.
It used to be like, why does this keep happening to me? But like, I've realized it's like, it keeps happening to me, so it gives me an opportunity to heal it and work through it. Because unfortunately, and I was just talking to a friend last night about this, like, because he was saying like, it took these people that were resemblant of my dad for me to be able to look at this. And I said, yeah, that's how it works. Like, we can't necessarily really do it in a vacuum.
Right.
We talk about it in therapy, but I really think it is by going through those experiences, having those emotions and those body memories come up and actually like being in it and living through it again, that we get the chance to heal it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I'm curious for you. So you just said, how much time you have, what, over 30 years?
No, I have 20 years.
Okay. 20 years. Yeah. So you just started ACA a year and a half ago.
Yep.
Had you obviously did Al-Anon.
Yeah.
Is this your first time diving into this work?
Into ACA? Oh, yeah. And I told myself, when I retire, which was 5 years ago, I'm going to give myself 6 months and I'm going to go right to ACA. I didn't. I didn't at all. And it's like, because there's this other little lie in my head that I don't you think I've suffered enough? Maybe this is good. Don't you know I've lost my kid? You know, and but you know, it isn't as painful as I thought. It's really kind of illuminating and oh, it's freeing because it's not my fault. And not that I wasn't taught that in Al-Anon and AA, but for some reason I can hear it in a different way and it's ringing true. So
Yeah,
yeah.
it really for me is like gets to the root cause.
Yes.
What this work has really shown me is I really see now, I knew alcohol was a symptom, but I really now view my alcoholism as a symptom of really of this like this underlying trauma.
Yes. Yeah.
So what laundry list characteristics do you relate to the most?
Oh, the laundry list characteristics. Well, most definitely addiction to abandonment. Oh my God, that sentence was like a slap every week when I heard it.
That
Addiction
was
to
it for
abandonment.
me. We
Yes.
what is it? I should know this off the top of my head. We are dependent personalities who are terrified of abandonment and will do anything to hold on to a relationship in order not to experience painful abandonment feelings, which we experience from growing up with people who were never there for us emotionally.
Look at you.
That was it for
Yeah.
me. Like, I
Yeah,
read
for
that, I was like,
sure.
oh, okay, this is my problem.
Yeah. And confusing love with pity. Oi, because that protects me. If I pity you, then I still have a bit of a remove and I don't have to be vulnerable. Yeah. And just putting everyone's needs ahead of mine. Because that's the out the world, you know, looking at everything. I couldn't define myself without another human or whatever. I didn't know who I was at all. All I knew was that I was angry. Yeah, that was my tool.
Yeah, and anger is often a secondary emotion, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's sadness. It's deep sadness.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to
Anything
move
else?
out.
It's more comfortable.
Yeah.
How old was your son when you got sober? Was it like right after he was born, or you stopped drinking then?
Right. I stopped drinking right before I got pregnant with him, but I was dry with no program for until, you know, for like 15 years. Dry as a bone. Dry as a bone. Angry, got suspended from my square nurse job, you know. And then I went into AA probably when he was like 13 or 14. He was ramping up and I was admitting to myself that I was an alcoholic. So I knew how to not drink every day, but that's about it. It was hard being me. At the time, I was in nursing school and, you know, they read the pamphlet in our community nursing class. That's about it, about alcoholism, you know, and reading that
The
pamphlet.
20 questions.
Yeah, the 20 questions. Thank you. I felt like my armpits got sweaty, stomach sweat. I was like, this is me. This is me. And I tucked it away. And then what happened? My husband and I, we split up and I was drinking and I bit my friend in the bar and she stole a mink coat type thing. You know, there's not really,
Oh yeah, you know that old story.
you know, the old mink coat she did. And that's why she didn't beat my ass because she was my tough girlfriend. That it's like when you want to get really messed up, I went with Tina, my bartender. And what was the point of that? Oh, point being that I thought I am going to quit drinking because otherwise I'll have to go to AA.
That was in D when you were living in DC.
Yeah. Yeah. And I stopped.
Wow.
Yeah.
But there was alcoholism within your family.
Oh my, yeah.
Yeah.
My brother is, I have a brother. I have three brothers and a sister, and my brother died, from a fight in a bar. He's an alcoholic. My one brother is in recovery, and then my sister and my other brother are dry.
Dry.
Yeah.
So no, but nobody's drinking.
Right. Right.
Wow, you guys have a thing for being dry, and you guys got a knack for it.
Right, isn't that strange?
It's very weird.
Yeah, so we'll just be dry and angry and
Yeah.
bitter. How's that? This is
Yeah.
great.
So then tell me about the experience that led you to start going to meetings.
I was divorced and I was dating, and I met a guy who said he used to be in AA. Now, that's a red flag if you're in the program, but I didn't realize that. You, because there is no, that's the cucumber to the pickle,
Yes,
right? There is
exactly.
no past tense.
Yes.
So we fell in love, and I told him that I don't drink, and it's a
Was he
deal breaker.
drinking? Like, was he, I used to be in the program and I still don't drink, or I used to be in the program and I drink?
I don't know. He lied to me. He lied to me a
Okay.
lot about his drinking, you know. So
I like
and I
liars
just told
too.
him, maybe I know liars are so hot. And I gave him an ultimatum, all the things that Al-Anon says not to do, because I didn't know. I was like, if you drink, it's, I'm out. And he drank, and I broke up with him, and I really missed him. And so how did I start going to meetings? Oh, I was talking to another nurse because I was big at freezing people out. You're dead to me. My world got really small. The only people I couldn't do that with really were my children and maybe my neighbor that I've known since high school. And it was small and mean, And so I met a nurse at work, and she was telling me that her husband is a sex addict, and she just found out, blah blah blah. And I said, "Well, are you going to break up with him? Because I'm rigid, I'm black and white, and you hurt me, and I'm out." And she's like, "No, because so many people have forgiven me." And that was like a flashing light to me. It's like, oh. And so I thought, I and so I thought, well, I'll forgive this guy that lied to me and got a DUI. And we got back together, and we started going to meetings together, and that was really great. That was cool. And my therapist at the time was like, "Why aren't you? So why don't you do the steps, Patsy? Why don't you do AA?" And I thought that, well, if I do that, I'll get in the way of his program.
Talk about
Oh,
alcoholic thinking.
right. Oh, alcoholic, a Al-Anon, you name it. Yeah. And I really meant it. I was like, I don't want to get in the way of his recovery. And but I really started to hear it in those rooms. It's like, oh, this is why. I mean, I had this visceral, I started crying like the first time I went to a meeting. And it's like, there's nothing, I am not a bad person. I have this disease that results in this kind of behavior. And I was like, oh, I'm not bad. I'm, anyway, so that was very profound to me. And I got into AA, and consequently, at the same time, my son was gearing up, and then he got sober. And we started going to meetings together, which was really beautiful, really sweet to be able to go to meetings together. And I just got real into it. And the guy just wasn't working. It
Did
wasn't
he stay
working.
sober?
Did he?
Sounds like a
Maybe.
no.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just was done. I was done. Even though he's in the book, and he was pivotal and really helped me a lot with Des. But I was taking his inventory about how he did his recovery, and I didn't like it. So I broke up with him. And yeah.
So, okay. If
Is that a long answer?
you've been in the, how long have you not been drinking though? It has to be longer than 20 years.
Yeah, it is longer
Yeah.
than 20
Okay.
years. It,
You.
I mean, Des would be 36 or something.
So we're the same
Probably
age.
like,
What year was he born?
he was born in 88.
Okay. I was born in 89.
So, and you're
35.
so yeah, he'd be 36. Yeah. So ever since he was
Wow.
born and before, yeah. And it
And so.
took me a while to sorry,
No, you're fine.
to let go of that dry time. Like, I thought I have all this time, and to just be right sized. And my sponsor helped me. She's like, well, you could, and whatever. And now
You don't give a shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. And I feel compassion and I understand that, you know, it's just a long, slow process, right?
Yeah, I could see myself if I were you when I first start going to meetings. I probably every time I would share, I would need to like, I'm new to A, but I haven't been drinking for 15 years. Like, did you have to feel the need to share it every time? Because that's totally something that I would have done.
I did in the beginning. And I was noticing that. And it's like, okay, well, hopefully, you know, and then finally you don't have to do it. And it's ego, right? It's ego.
Mm. Were you already going to meetings by the time your son, he was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was already, I know it's, I was doing that on my own. And then Desmond presented, you know, so I was already in Al-Anon and AA. And then, you know, like he was found at the bottom of Market Street, unconscious. And so, yeah.
And that's when he was 14, right?
Yep.
And yep. How long had it been that you, because I know that there was like a few incidences that had happened before that. When was the first time that you were aware that he was drinking or using drugs?
Probably when he was 13, you know, he was drunk with a friend, and then also he was smoking, which, you know, smoking is a gateway thing. It just is. And he was seen, my ex used to work at the Chronicle downtown, and he was seen like sitting on the sidewalk with some known black tar heroin users, you know? And so he was exhibiting those kinds of things. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting you just say that, like about cigarettes being a gateway thing, because like me too, I started smoking at 12, but that also too, is it a gateway thing, or is it actually like, again, it's another sign of like a child hurting.
Yeah.
And trying to get some, it's another coping mechanism.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's a way sure. to try to not feel. So it's like, of course it's a gateway.
Yeah,
you know, I never really thought about it from that respect, but like, that's really what's actually is going on when people are like, oh, that's a gateway. It's like, yeah, it is, because somebody's doing that because they're trying to change the way they feel, want to feel, yeah. you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, he was really tall. He became 6'4".
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's like me. I started smoking at 12, and thank God, because I would have been 7'1". Thank God. I mean, I'm 5'11". So thank God I started. That would have been horrible. Whoever said smoking was not a good thing. So then you literally, I just viscerally felt your experience as I was going through that. And obviously I don't know what it's like to have with a child, but like, you know, with a parent. And I was just thinking about like, okay, so 14. And then when did he get sober at like 18 or 19?
18. Yeah.
And then you had 5 years. Yep. And then how many, when he relapsed, then how many years until he died?
Probably like 2 or 3.
Okay. So we're talking like what, like a 12 year span or so, 5 of which of those years were him being sober. But I just think about all of those years and about just how it is it's like living in fucking hell, you know? It's like, I bet even thinking about that, like I was just thinking about that, just what it's like to live with somebody who is in active addiction, and it's just always present. And then you have those moments where it's like you forget, and then all of a sudden it like your reality, it like it, almost like the wind gets knocked out at you of you, because you like all of a sudden you realize the reality of your situation and like, fuck.
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine it probably felt like 30 years.
It did. And I was in fight or flight for like all of my 50s, you know? And yeah, it was horrible. It was horrible. And just finally realizing there's nothing I can do. It's not a do kind of thing. And just because I'm his mother and he's my child doesn't mean that I can. That was very pivotal for me to realize. That sort of took the fire out of it. It's saying to myself, like, I don't have the right tools.
And I think that it's even harder when it comes to a child, because you think about enabling, and that becomes almost like a different conversation when you're talking about somebody who's under 18 years old.
Yeah, he was my responsibility. I needed to get him to school. Yeah, I know. I used to think to myself, God, I can't wait till he's 18. Please, Jesus.
Do you ever consider having him sent to like a boarding school?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to send him to a rehab, in Utah or wherever, I'm just using it as an example to, make sure he got it, and there's no guarantee in any of that. But I felt like this is too much for me, and I can't, because I couldn't keep my paws and my eyes on him all day, And luckily my ex-husband really helped. He really helped in that way, because I was ready to, well, let's send him to this rehab here, and I'll put a second on my house. And I know women in Al-Anon, just Al-Anon, she lost everything trying to save her daughter, and her daughter died, And so he was like, no, we're not going to do that. Let's, try this. So yeah, I was terrified. I was terrified, and I didn't want him to die, obviously, and I felt like completely in fear that was going to happen, or I couldn't, dot, dot, dot. There was, yeah. So yeah, I was terrified. I didn't sleep. It was really bad.
So I love when you were talking about like initially going to Al-Anon meetings and saying like that you thought they were so weird and crazy. What was the moment where you bought in? Like, what was hitting that bottom leg?
What was the moment? God, it used to be so graphic in my mind, but either we sent him to her, or he had relapsed or whatever. And I thought, I need help. Oh, I'd already been going, but he had come home from a rehab and I read his journal, which I don't want to be that mom. And I write about this in the book. I was a fucking snooper. And so I read his journal, and, he wrote about shooting up. Oh my God. And then I told my ex, and we were sort of triangulated, and Desmond's like, it's just writing. I'm a writer. And my ex is a journalist, and they triangulated away from me.
Wow.
Oh yeah. And so I was the crazy, and you're snooping, and I was bringing the evidence, like, look, see, it's happening again. We need to do something. And in that moment, that was when I thought, and I got on my knees. I'm like, I've heard this in the meetings. This is what they say to do. And I committed for real, because I was making myself insane.
When you started going to Al-Anon until he ended up actually getting sober, like, what was that like as far as setting boundaries with him?
Oh, it was really hard. It was really hard, because I thought, I'm the one who listens to him. And if he doesn't have me, he won't have anyone, or he'll do X, Y, or Z. And the women who helped me, and so I did that thing where you bookend it, right? I'm like, okay, I'm going to set this boundary. And the hardest thing about doing those boundaries with him was showing up for myself, because that's what it was about, right? I am not willing to tolerate this behavior from you. And I thought, again, I thought something terrible and catastrophic would happen. And some of them, he would just go, okay, mom. And so the struggle is within myself for the boundary, not him necessarily. And, it's a little bit of a tangent, but with him, I learned how to set boundaries like, no, you can't move back in with me. No, I'm not going to take your calls after 9 at night, things like that. And then now, with ACA, I am realizing boundaries for myself, like I don't obsess about that I broke up with Tim and is he okay 2 years later. Oh yeah, we don't go there. We don't go down the Tim road, and we don't go down the did I damage my daughter for life. And so making those are boundaries for myself in ways, places that I don't want to go.
Do you think the boundaries that you started to set with him were helpful in him hitting his bottom?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I really do. I mean, we kicked him out of the house, and that was the last thing I wanted to do. And again, my ex-husband really, he held firm, you know, if you're shooting up, you know, if you're using in either of our houses, you can't stay here. And that was after going through all the rigmarole of, Kaiser, which I really love their chemical dependency program, whatever they call it now, they make recovery available. And, you know, that the scene in the book where I saw that he had track marks up and down all his arms. It's like, no, you don't get, this is a no. And I did it and I don't regret it. And it helped him, you know, he went to the Tenderloin. We took him to a shelter and he was out there for 2 weeks. And he likes to shower. He likes to eat. He's, you know, that isn't for him. And so, yeah, I do think it helped.
Did you have a therapist that was really helpful in this? That, like, because I just feel like so many therapists don't know what they're talking about, you know?
Right. Not really. No. I don't think. And now when I do therapy, they need to speak recovery, you know? But no, they, yeah. In fact, I would have to school them a little bit about it, you know, which, right? Well, of course you do. It's your son. That's okay. No, it's not. It's codependent. It's, you know, infantilizing him or whatever. Yeah. So I mean, it was helpful, but I feel like Al-Anon and AA and my two sponsors and like my spiritual teacher, my Buddhist teacher, who is also in recovery and a mother, they really were key for me.
So talk about like your journey of like, because it's so beautiful, some of the things that you say and just the peace that you were able to find, which almost seems like it would be an impossible place to get to. But what was that process of really learning how to detach with love?
Do you shit shows ever feel like you're just too damn busy to eat healthy? So I used to feel this way. Every day I would wake up with the intention of eating clean, and before you know it, it's 10:30 p.m., I'm in my bed, and I'm eating smart food popcorn. That is, until I found the perfect solution. Meal kits from Sunbasket. No matter what your lifestyle is, Sunbasket caters to your kind of healthy. Every single recipe is shit show proof, so pre-measured, pre-proportioned, easy to prepare. I most recently made the seared Alaskan halibut with mashed potatoes and herb brown butter parmesan sauce, and it was damn good. And for you shit shows out there who only know how to work a microwave, Sunbasket also has pre-made meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes. No prep, no mess. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 off your first four deliveries. That is sunbasket.com/adultchild to save $120 across your first four deliveries plus free shipping on your very first order.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today.
Whew. Back in those days, I worked three 12-hour shifts, so I had 4 days, and I went to AA, Al-Anon, therapy, and then I went to the Zen Center on Monday nights for that recovery meeting, right? And I had a Buddhist teacher, and I was throwing everything at it because I was drowning. I was absolutely drowning. And so I did a lot of work and people were holding me. And each time something happened that I thought that I was sort of, I was like making a deal with God, but we're not going to talk about it, right? If only he can graduate from high school. He did graduate from high school. If only he can go to college. Nah, 2 weeks at state. So making these deals with myself, and if this happens, I'll dot dot dot. And then he relapsed. He fucking relapsed. And I was still standing, you know, because I thought I would like what implode or self-destruct or that it would kill me. And it didn't. And it's shifted to a oh shit. Okay. See, my voice is getting quieter. It was a surrender, just a surrender that this is not for me to hold, and that a mother's love is not part of it. Deeply, I saw that, and my both my AA sponsor, my Al-Anon sponsor, especially my AA sponsor, lesbian dog walker, no children, deeply helped me with my children. And she's, they're not yours. They're not yours. And would just help me time and time and time again, trigger palooza, all these things. It's like, just where are you? And she really brought God, whatever you want to call that, God, love, source. She kept bringing me back to that. And yeah, the pain of, and I'm going to cry because it was such a pivotal moment in my spiritual awakening, from which I did not want it to be, from a fucking kid that dies. I don't want that. That's not, I don't want to wrap it up in a bow and tell you all about it, you know. And I have 20, anyway, just realizing this might happen. This might happen. And she kept gently bringing me back to it. And so, can you love him as he is right now? Can you just be right here, right now? And she'd say things to me like, look at the trees and look at the light. In my mind, I was screaming, fuck you, I don't want to look at the light. You know, and she just kept bringing me back, and everybody, and in the program, and in Al-Anon, you know, I'd sort of use my junkie son like a weapon. This is how hard my life is, right? And then you'd meet other women and oh, hi, da, da. My son's a junkie. Oh, mine too. And so bringing, I'm in this world of like, this isn't special. It's painful, but it's not unique. It's painful. And we can do this together. And so that helped me from my being separate and realizing that, yeah, this might happen. Just like, what if you had a kid who is, I don't know, drastically allergic to bee stings, or you have that blooding, like there are boys that have that bleeding thing. There are people who live with children who have conditions, and that's what I am doing. That's what I am doing. And it shifted that fire into sadness. It's just great grief and sadness, which is held in my body differently. It doesn't feel as toxic. And it's not, sure, I was afraid of it, but even that fear was like, okay, well, I just don't know. I just don't know. And that's giving me, it's given me strength in so many other ways in my life that, again, I didn't want to give him credit for. I was like, fuck you. I was so mad at him when he died. I was like, you motherfucker. And you're going to tell, you know, you're going to teach me a lesson. Anywho, yeah.
How many years has it been since he's passed away?
Seven.
What did that look like walking through that grief? What did the first month look like? What did the first year look like? How did you get through it?
The first 3 months I barely remember right now in a way, but now you might want to cut this because I started going to psychics after he died. And
Why would I cut it? I'm all into this stuff. Yeah, I wanted to
you're
ask
okay.
you about that. Yes, of course.
Erdman told me to write the book. I started going to psychics. He told me to write the book, and I was like, yeah, I bet, Mr. Ego.
How long after he had passed away did you go to the psychic?
Probably within like a month or two, my friend in
Oh.
the gave me a gift, only in California, right? Here's an hour conversation with a psychic on the phone in Canada. And
Nice.
she was for real. She knew stuff that that was impossible for her to find out. So why, how did we get here? Oh, the months after. Yeah. And so I would be able to speak to him through these various mediums, you know, because the worst thing was, as a mother, I feel my daughter right now. I feel her. I feel her in New York. Feel her. And I didn't feel Desmond anymore. And it was that was really terrible. I just didn't feel him. And it was really hard. And so, one of the psychics, because I still go, and one of the psychics said to Desmond, said, "You sleep, don't you?" Because I was an insomniac because I was monitoring my son for a million years. And I did. And he said, "That's from me." And I sleep now. So, long story long, the nights, for some reason, I could go to sleep. I would pretty much cry myself to sleep. And then I slept. And as soon as I woke up, it was like a fire. "He's dead. He's dead. My son is dead." It just like that. And I had a headache for 3 months. And, you know, my girl stayed with me for maybe a week.
Your
And
daughter?
yeah, and I was really mindful, aware that I didn't want to lose it completely for her. Because she'd already had so much, you know, and now here's your mom disappearing again. And so that was really a struggle for me. So it kind of kept it together for her in a way. And it just each day got through each day. And I kept going to meetings, you know, I just went every day. That was when they were still in person. I mean, they are now, but you know, pre-COVID. And I went to each day. A new beginning at 7 in the morning. For some reason, that's what I did. And I was held. And I am so deeply held by AA, you know, and knowing that he died, I was clean. I didn't feel like, oh, I had no guilt. No guilt. That's from, you know, AA, Al-Anon, and now even further, ACA. But this is what happens. And I lost my son, and no, I wasn't angry at God. It's like, if you're a junkie, you have a higher chance of dying than other people. And there was this acceptance, and so it was just sort of raw, not raw grief in that way, you know. And Tim was great. I don't know what I did. I probably laid on the couch and watched TV, and you know, my house was overrun with love and support. People in AA. Yeah, so those 3 months, I mean, I had a headache, and the people that I worked with, they all gave me their vacation time. So I had 3 months off with pay
Wow.
from my job. Yeah.
That's so
So it's hard to
kind.
know. Yeah, I know. And I used to be a jerk at that job, and through recovery, they let me change, and I really like to remember that now, because if I want to pigeonhole someone, they let me change, and I think that's important. So yeah, it's terrible. It was, you know, I was obsessed with finding out the whole story, which while he was alive, I knew better. I knew that. You know, you snoop, it hurts. And he and his girlfriend, who he was living with at the time, she was from here, and she came out here, and she and I, we went to these kirtan classes. It's Indian, like East Asia drumming, and just cried. We did that in the morning sometimes, and she and I got obsessed with finding out the whole story. And I knew there would be an end to it, and I knew that it's like, really? But yeah, I did. I wanted to know.
What do you think that's about? And what did you get from it, I guess?
Yeah, what did I get from it? More ugliness, more of, yeah, he's an addict. Do you need to confirm it, Pats? I don't know. Yeah, I don't regret that I did it. Yeah, it didn't solve or change anything. It was good for the book later. For some reason, I just wanted to know, put the pieces together. Like, I could never really find out the circumstances about him ODing on New Year's Eve. Does it matter? It doesn't matter. And I knew at the end of it wouldn't matter. But I just did it. Just did it. But I didn't feel like, yeah, I wasn't looking at it in that way. I some grief obsession, you know?
Do you feel like prior to Des passing away, had you experienced much grief?
Well, I mean, my mom died when I was a year and a half. And so I feel like my whole life really was kind of based on grief. You know, and here's these five kids, no mother. And my dad was not really, I mean, he did the best he could and it wasn't that great. And so there was always that sense of missing of her not being there. We weren't like everybody else. And yeah.
How did she die?
She died after having a baby. And it was around, so my, it was in 1960, and it was when people didn't get out of bed right away. You know what I mean? And she got a blood clot and went to her brain, and she died. She just died in an afternoon. And then there we are, and all of us, all my siblings are, you know, that's the trauma that we carried. That's what happened. You know, those are my cards through my whole childhood, right? We're motherless. We have housekeepers. We get welfare cheese. It was a lot of shame that, you know, and as a kid, you think it's you, that somehow you're insufficient. You're the thing anyway.
Do you remember like realizing that you didn't have a mom?
No, just always the memory of not having, you know.
You're the youngest, right?
No, my sister is. My sister is a year younger than me. Yeah.
Oh, so she had her right after you, like immediately,
Yeah.
essentially.
Yeah. They had five kids. Boom, 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 like they did. And my sister had her mother for 6 weeks. I had her for a year and a half. That is a big difference, I think. She touched me, she bathed me, she held me. And my sister didn't have that. And so I feel like that is significant.
It is. Did your older siblings or your dad, would they ever talk about your mom? Would you guys ever talk about her?
Not really. It was sort of an unspoken don't talk about it type thing. Yeah. And my brothers never did. And my dad didn't either.
And was your dad very emotionally closed off?
Yeah, he was closed off and he was angry. He was overwhelmed. That was his state, was angry or overwhelmed, right?
And what was it like in your home? Like, what was the environment?
It was strained. And my siblings and I, we were kind of we were a pack. We were a pack, and it was us together sort of against my dad. You know, is he coming home? Is he, what's he doing? Where's he, you know? Yes, we would just sort of stay away from him.
Was he scary?
Yeah, he was totally a rager. Totally a rager.
And your older siblings were acting out, right?
Yeah. Oh
Yeah.
yeah. My three brothers were they were just wild. They were robbing stores and stealing cars, and there's a little piece in the book about my brother David, the one who died. He was the he manifested, I feel like, our dis-ease and all the trauma and pain in our family. You
Yeah,
know,
the problem child.
he was the problem child for sure. He like fed one of the teacher's dogs Ex-Lax in his car. He stole, I don't know why they took us with them, but he like stole either some geese or some chicken from one of our neighbors just to do it. I don't know what. So he went to reform school, or you know, Hannah Boy Center. He went to YA, Youth Authority. a really troubled guy. And then my other brothers were under the radar stealing and doing whatever. Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes is, "You weren't the problem child. You were the child communicating the problem."
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we are communicating the problem for sure.
Yeah. Have you had any conversations with your siblings about your childhood? Like, have you connected with any of them on that?
Yeah. I'm taking a pause on my siblings right now. And my sister is just, she remembers every bad thing that happened. And she's really toxic with me, so I don't. But I talked to my older brother about it, and like he remembers when he started not being able to remember her face. He was 5 when she died, and talking about we laugh a lot because it was so fucked up. And the things that we did, we do laugh a lot, joking is coping or denying. But yeah, we do talk about it.
So, I mean, a mother wound is like a big thing. And I know that you just started doing ACA work. Is that something that you've looked at prior to this, or?
It's funny you ask that, Andrew, because I feel like my next book is going to be, I'm going to try and make it a novel, but we'll see, about mothers and daughters. Because I never wanted to look at it ever. Because again, that's sort of like I won't be able to withstand the pain that it's something dark and terrible. Until like in my 50s, I was in therapy and she was a somatic therapist. And she's like, okay, I want you to be the little girl on the couch. And I'm like, fuck. And it cracked me open. And I was really able to, just see that little girl in a dress with her legs not even going to the end of the couch. And because before that, I could hardly talk about my mother without bursting into tears. So it was just always below the surface. And it's anyway, so now thinking about my daughter, who she's upset with me for I'm trying to pick the right word, but let's just say neglecting her. It wasn't like CPS neglect, but neglecting her during Desmond's fire. He was on fire her whole fucking childhood. And for me, when I got into recovery and all the time I was spending away from her. And so look, that got me to thinking. So I'm like, okay, I know that I cannot go to her with this. So what is happening with me as a mother, et cetera, looking at myself in order to show up in a more wholesome way for her, And so I started thinking about attachment styles. And then I did get, I have a couple of books about, the mother-daughter dynamic. And I have two big holes. I have my mother and her grandmother. I never knew them. And so I want to look at that. I want to look at that. And I even sent away for 23andMe and see what happens with that. I'm curious and a little fearful. Like I read part of Mother Hunger and I'm like, okay, that's enough. It's enough. I know I didn't have this.
Yeah, it's interesting with your daughter. I just interviewed a guy that's in my community, and his older brother was like developmentally disabled, and he felt very, very neglected. But there's shame that he feels, like, for him to say that, it's like, no, like,
Right.
your experience is valid too. And I think
Yeah.
with your daughter, it's like the only like, how do you show up for her? Like, the only, all we want is just to like be heard and understood and care that, not necessarily having to go back to the past, but just care that like we're still hurting now.
Yeah. I have a living amends with her and I'm paying for her therapy. And I paid for Desmond's until he died. It's like it's okay. Yeah, and I even offered, do you want to go to therapy with me? And she's like, no, not right. I'm doing enough now. So mine is my side of the street and what's going on with me. And to not have her grieve with me or help me or hold it with me. I'm her mother. I'm her mother, So in the first couple of years, it does money on it, like his birthday or the anniversary of his death. I realized, because I would that as a mother, I need to ask her how she's feeling. And I want it so badly for her to ask me that. How are you, mom? It's not her job. And I really wanted it. And there's a part of me, I won't lie, I still want her to understand and comfort me. And that's not the way I ultimately want to be, right? That's not the behavior that is going to sit with me.
Yeah, because you want a mom too. And we all do, you know? It's so it's like natural to feel that way. So diving into the ACA work now, I'm curious what have the revelations been for you? Has there been a realization that, oh wow, my childhood fucked me up a lot more than I thought it did? That's actually the first question that I usually ask every interview. When was the moment that you realized that your childhood fucked you up a lot more than you thought it did?
I don't know if it was in those words, but realizing, yeah, this is a really big deal to be a motherless kid, five kids. I mean, it was completely, it was neglect, it was instability. He lost our house, early on,
And what
reading
do
it
you,
and realizing, yeah.
and so what do you think some of those core beliefs are that resulted from your childhood? How has this showed up in your life as an adult?
That my needs are unattractive and it's better not to have any at all, because you're not going to get it, right? And this sort of scarcity and poverty of mind, right? That's for everybody else, but I don't get to have that. Don't hope, and then you'll be safe in a way, Hope is for suckers. Realizing, because in some ways, because I want to have that balance of, this is what happened. This is how I landed in this body. But yeah, it's big. It's kind of enormous in a way, and it marked me, and I have felt less than all my life, right? And that I need to be hide my needs, and be funny, be quick.
I'm curious about your romantic relationship history. What was your type, or who were you drawn to?
Right. I was drawn to cold and aloof. And if I feel like I have to tap dance to get your attention, and smart men, right? Men who are smart, and that would make me smart. And then writers. I was drawn to writers because I always wanted to write, but I did not allow myself until I got into recovery and to make myself, to take my place and to be big. It's even it makes me nervous to say the word big. That's bad, don't say it, all that stuff. So, and if they and they always were financially, they were messes, just like my dad. Financial messes, aloof. I had to work hard for them to get to see me, and kind of neglectful, And yeah, I mean, I was married for 17 years.
Well, yeah, I was just about to say that you've had like kind of just a lot of slew of pretty long relationships, huh?
I know. And then after I was divorced and I was raising my kids, I thought I lived alone. I was not living alone. I was with children. And so now, for these past 2 years, the first year I was pretty numb. I was not bummed. I was guilty. My Al-Anon and my ACA was on fire about taking space for myself. But now I'm not trying to find another person to fill that hole for me. And this is the first time in my life, first time in my life that I'm not, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And that's definitely ACA. Yeah. Seeing all that, reading that stuff in there, I was like, oh, and Tim, he's a good guy. And we just fit hand in glove in that way. And I don't want to rescue and predicate everything and put everybody first, even if it feels like it's burning my skin to do the opposite action,
Yeah, because it's like within these relationships, you're just both coming to the table with your unresolved childhood wounds. both people have to be willing to work on it, you know?
Yeah. And we did a lot of good work together. And I mean, he had lost his mother as well. So I thought, okay, I can't do any of my I'm special and different with that. That's interesting. And but yeah, both wounded. And I kept chasing him, chasing him, chasing him. Here, let me do this for you. Let me, yeah, I'm always chasing. And that makes me really sad about myself. You know, I don't need to do that. And the idea that, yeah, my childhood is where that comes from. Not because I am
Inherently
broken.
flawed.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't believe in this broken picker stuff. I just feel like it's all just what we're working through, and that relationships, yeah, we do replay our childhood 100%. And we do it in every aspect. We do it at work. I mean, work, now that I'm not working, I'm so nice, you know. But all the stuff that manifests there that is from our childhood.
What showed up there for you at work?
Wanting to be the best so that I would get noticed by the aloof daddy doctors, right? Because there's a disparity,
Daddy doctors.
right? Right. And even, I mean, there was this one woman who was, but she might as well have been the dad, because she wasn't angry. She was disappointed. And I wanted to be the different nurses, and nurses are smart, and we are this and that. And I would try and get her very reserved approval, you know? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, anything else other than just people need to go read this damn book?
Yeah, read my
Anything
book.
else going on?
Read my book. No, I'm in a good place right now. I'm just kind of, you know, the summer, he died in July. His birthday's in September. So summer is still a little rocky. And I'm feeling better. I'm feeling it's more whole. I feel more whole about it. It's part of me, and it's not as jarring. And so I'm feeling, yeah, at peace. Feeling peaceful, believe it or not.
When does it come up? Like, I'm sure there's still times, like, you know, and how do you deal with that now?
When does it come up? It surprises me sometimes. But like, if I can't really go to Japantown anymore, for example. You know, we went there a lot, me he and my daughter and I.
Pokemon cards.
Yes. Oh
Gotta
yeah,
catch
that's
them all.
it's in the book. I forgot. Yeah. I can't go to Japantown. There are various, you know, like my friend drove through the Tenderloin the other day, and it's like, nope. Let's not go there. I don't like to read books about junkies. I don't like to watch, you know, movies with people shooting up. But even that is getting better, you know. It's all love, nothing personal. And I really believe that. And even his death is not personal to me. It's sad, and it's broken my heart, but it's not personal, you know.
Nor is it your fault.
No, yeah. Didn't have a lot of that. I'm so glad about that. I have other issues, but that's not one of them.
Well, this has been amazing. Thank you for your time. It's going to help a lot
Oh,
of
thank you so much.
All right, Chit Shows, if you were someone who constantly finds yourself giving, giving, and then giving more to the point where you are completely burnt out, listen up. I am teaming up with the Boundaries Queen herself, Barb Nangle, to host a transformative workshop called Stop Overgiving, Repair Your Life from the Inside Out. It's happening on Wednesday, November 13th at 7 p.m. Eastern. And this workshop is for anyone who is trapped in people-pleasing patterns, exhausted from sacrificing your needs on behalf of others. For anyone whose inability to set boundaries is causing you to neglect yourself, saying yes when you really want to say no because you think saying no makes you a bad person. In this
workshop, Barb is going to teach you how to set clear, authentic boundaries, giving you real tools you can start using immediately. She will provide you with tips and scripts on what to say and how to say it, as well as what to do when people push back against your boundaries. Plus, there will be plenty of time for you to get answers on your personal questions directly from a boundaries expert. So if you are ready to break out of this people-pleasing prison you're trapped in, start living for yourself, well, how about you head to adultchildpodcast.com/workshops to get your damn spot. I'm also running a special right now. If you join the Shit Show community between now and November 1st, you will get access to this workshop for free. So with limited capacity, make sure you get your ticket now before it's gone. So either go to adultchildpodcast.com/workshops or go to the show notes and damn the Join Shit Show. Trust me, this is a workshop you don't want to miss.